It's February 22nd, 2009. The Nisqually tribe is holding the Leshai Quaymuth Honor Walk.
I look at it as here we are running through Fort Lewis, running through military grounds. This was actually Nisqually grounds. This was his homeland. See, back then, I believe that they didn't believe in borders or being fenced in or, you know, you're designated to this area, that they were free to roam. So the run today was, and the walk was about that justice and the freedom that we insist on having.
The Nisqually River watershed, shown in green, is the traditional homeland of the Squally Opsh tribe. The Squally Opsh, also known as the People of the Prairie, lived in 13 main villages that stretched along the river from its origin in the glaciers of Mount Rainier to the mouth, which empties into the Puget Sound.
Close to where we're standing here, back on the far side of the road where that tall tree is, that was a place known as Yawalt, which was one of the principal villages of the Nisqually. They had 13 major villages between the mouth of the Nisqually and Mount Rainier.
The sustainable culture of the Nisqually people was first affected when the British established the Hudson Bay Company in 1833, prompting intermarriage, eventual military presence, and a continual increase of American settlers. In 1854, the first governor of the Washington Territory, Isaac Stevens, negotiated treaties with a number of tribes in the Washington area in order to establish reservations. In the Medicine Creek Treaty, the Nisqually were designated a parcel of land near the Puget Sound. Nisqually leaders, Leshai and Quaymuth, refused to sign the treaty when they learned that their people would not have access to the river where they needed to fish. In spite of their refusal, X's appeared on the treaty indicating their signatures. The Nisqually Reservation was once again relocated in 1856 to 4,717 acres on both sides of the Nisqually River. In 1858, Chief Leshai was wrongfully convicted for murder and subsequently hung. His brother, Quaymuth, was assassinated in the governor's office. In 2004, 146 years later, the Washington State House and Senate passed resolutions acknowledging Chief Leshai's innocence and recognizing the injustice that had occurred. Soon after, a historical court exonerated Leshai of all charges. The reservation was divided into 30 allotments, where Nisqually families built their homes. Many Nisqually members remember life on the north side of the river as peaceful and prosperous for the tribe. Just prior to the U.S. entry into World War I in 1917, with patriotism swelling, there was a demand for military training camps, and cities across America were competing for the influx of jobs and money a fort would bring. Led by the people of Tacoma, Pierce County made an agreement with the War Department that if the county provided the land, a fort would be built. Pierce County voters overwhelmingly approved the condemnation of 84,000 acres to be given to the Army for the new fort. This included 3,300 acres of the Nisqually Reservation, displacing all of the Nisqually people on the north side of the river.
Almost all the Indians that were dispossessed across the reservation moved scattered to the winds, to Tulalip and Chehalis and all kinds of places.
They said you could hope they were going to give them so much money for their land after making them move. That never happened. Blankets and they were laced with smallpox, so a lot of them died from smallpox. But the things that they were promised never happened. They were supposed to get an education. They were supposed to get help for health needs and all that. And never happened.
Following years of mild contention, Fort Lewis and the tribe found that many of their interests could be reconciled. In the words of Billy Frank, a Nisqually tribal member instrumental in the relationship, "A general's mission is to train troops. He makes some noise. Sometimes he shakes the ground. Our mission is to protect the environment, to protect the salmon, the trees." Many cite the establishment of the hatchery on Clear Creek as the foundation of the cooperative relationship between the Nisqually tribe and the fort that exists today. After years of negotiation and planning, the hatchery opened in 1991. From there, the Nisqually people in the fort have built a partnership based on communication. George Walters speaks about the relationship between the Nisqually tribe and Fort Lewis.
There's been a clear understanding from both parties that we are neighbors and we're going to be neighbors. We haven't solved every problem, but we might as well try and solve every problem. The folks here on the Indian Reservation came to realize that while they complained plenty about Fort Lewis, and some days there's plenty to complain about in terms of the artillery noise, they live in a place that's a lot different than, say, the Puyallup Reservation. It's in the middle of the city of Tacoma, and that could be what would be right here if it weren't for Fort Lewis. So Fort Lewis was a beneficial neighbor, although not everything about them would be necessarily beneficial.
If you look at a satellite photo of the area, you're going to see that we're becoming kind of an island here. There's a lot of development all around us. If it wasn't here, the prairies would probably have shopping centers on them. We'd have houses all around all our wetlands and lakes. You know, you see that all around here.
I think the relationship is real, real good and real powerful. And like I said, we want to keep it that way. They are our neighbors, and they have a good understanding of how to protect the river now. And that's the kind of neighbors we want.
We have a common interest, and that's maintaining some of the history that is taking place here on Fort Lewis and preserving some of the very sacred areas to the Nisqually tribe, as well as maintaining some of the flora and fauna that you can't find anywhere else right now in the state of Washington.
From an environmental perspective, Fort Lewis is beneficial in many ways. The fort covers 12% of the land within the Nisqually watershed, making it the largest single landowner. In partnership with the tribe, the fort has taken measures to safeguard the Nisqually main stem and tributaries that lie within its borders, implementing restoration and protection projects to restore riparian areas and augment the populations of species unique to the prairie, including the bluebird and the western gray squirrel. The relationship between Fort Lewis and the Nisqually tribe maintains that tribal members have access to the fort to visit sacred and culturally significant sites, to harvest native foods and medicines, and to manage the hatchery. That said, times have changed drastically from when the first Squallyopsh villages dotted the riverside and prairies. Artillery impact areas and restricted zones render much of the traditional homeland simply inaccessible.
At any time that they want or need access to Fort Lewis, we'll run it through our normal procedure for getting access for them, which is going through range control and providing a memo that gives them specific access. So they just coordinate with us when they want access to a certain area, but it's pretty open for them to get access anywhere they want. Other than the impact area, obviously. Well, it's just really hard to get access there. It's very few and far between that you actually get a day that they're not shooting artillery. And so hence the walk that you guys get to go on. That's kind of, that may only happen once a year.
This year, the Nisqually Cultural Committee and Fort Lewis have coordinated to create the Leshai Quaymuth Honor Walk, an opportunity for tribal and community members to visit many of the significant sites now contained within the fort's boundaries. On a Sunday morning in late February, members of the Nisqually tribe gathered at the tribal center, where vans carried them across the Nisqually River to the northeast part of what was once their reservation. Beginning at Back Squally Plain, now Range 91, they visited sites significant to the Nisqually tribe, including Exeter Springs on Muck Creek, family allotments, and Nisqually burial sites and cemeteries, concluding at the Clear Creek Salmon Hatchery with a community lunch.
The celebration we had today for this walk in honor of Chief Leshai, I think it was a long time coming. I used to try to urge the different tribal council people, we need to celebrate Jai's birthday. You know, he was our chief, and we need to honor him. And I'm so glad about the culture committee that existed now, and for my daughter, Nets, that kind of spearheaded this. They did a very good job on planning this. I was really proud to see all the people, especially young people, from the little kids to elders that took part in this. It really pleased me to see that it was a good happening, and I walked a mile.
The Leshai and Quaymuth is about brothers, honoring the brothers, and it's also about justice, representing justice and peace. These two men, Quaymuth and Leshai, weren't criminals. They were about standing up for dignity, living a life of dignity, and that's what we wanted to bring back to the Children's Hope. You know, that spirit that will strengthen them to realize that, you know, we deserve a life of dignity as Native Americans. kids, like little ones like him, you know, Michael, he's 5 years old, and to start introducing him to this type of activity is about giving him that, hey, you know, you have a past, you have roots, you belong in this land, you know, and you're free.
They tried to get rid of us, but we're here.
Very much so.
We survived.
In spite of the complicated history, the Nisqually tribe and Fort Lewis have developed a partnership built on cooperation and an understanding of mutual goals. Today, they work as allies to preserve the land and support Native culture.